June 15, 1979.
I didn't ask you before, but when you were a kid, did you go to church?
When I lived in Long Beach, on Cleveland Avenue, I went to the First Christian Church on 7th and 10th Street.
7th and 10th Street?
Oh, pardon me, 7th and Obispo.
And
attended Sunday school regular and stayed for church. A group of us stayed for church most of the time, morning service. And I had a very good friend who was a very good Christian and was a member of that church. I went forward one time with a group of the rest of the Sunday school class to be give myself to the Lord, you know, they said in those days. But that is my closest church affiliation.
Did your family?
But over the years, in the younger years, I used to be a regular attendant at the Christian Endeavor meetings at Community Church in Linwood, which was run by the Methodists, and we used to stay for church meeting most of the time. And when they started the Baptist Church in Linwood, a good many transferred to the Baptist Church, and they went to the Baptist Young People's meeting and to the evening church service. But, that composed mostly of my Christian upbringing was in those. And in the later years, while I used to attend Presbyterian Church in Compton, or that the Methodist Church in Compton.
Did you get? When you were a kid, did your family go to church too, or did
no.
you? They just sent you off Sunday
morning. Well, I went because I wanted to, on account of my association with a lady named Mrs. Kramer, who lived on the corner of 10th and Freeman, and who had a, well, his husband was crippled in the Civil War. He had a bullet that was lodged in his spine, lower spine, and he was could just barely shuffle, and she took care of him all the time. Very good Christian lady. And a number of us children in the block used to go down there, especially in the evenings, and Mr. Kramer would sit out on the front porch and tell us stories. And of course, there were quite a few flies in those days, and he had fly swatter, and he'd bat the flies, and he wouldn't let us sweep up the flies or anything, because he had some frogs around there that come up at night and licked all the flies up that were laying on the porch step, wooden porch. One story I can remember, he told us, he was telling us, you know, he says, I can jump. And he said, we kind of kept quiet because we didn't know Mr. Kramer couldn't jump. And so finally, nobody challenged him. He said, you really think I can't jump, don't you? And he said, I can jump tall that tree. So he knew something was up. And so somebody asked him, how? He said, well, I can jump a little. That tree can't jump any.
Did Mrs. Kramer influence you?
Mrs. Kramer was really the influence of my going to the Christian church.
That particular church.
That particular church. And we all attended until the minister became sick. And we got a new minister who didn't like small children sitting down in the front of the church because they were distracting sometimes, they whispered.
And then did you just go to Sunday school or what?
I went to Sunday school the rest of the time a little bit.
were your family involved in politics in any way? Your grandmother or your father or anything?
Not that I know of, really.
Or were they known for, you know, being Republicans?
They were Republicans, yes. They voted very regular, and they were definitely Republicans.
But they weren't involved in any kind of political activity?
My mother and father weren't, and as far as my grandmother is concerned, I don't know, but I doubt it. I have nothing to recollect that they were. But my younger aunt especially, I was better acquainted with her over the years, my Aunt Sadie, and she knew, she was well acquainted with the different, like, different mayors of the city and the different ones, and had friends among them, so-called influential people of the town. So as far as ever getting out and working in politics, I don't believe it. Any of them did. I wouldn't say yes, or I wouldn't say no.
Okay, I guess when we left off on the other tape, you were talking about your second summer from high school, where you worked for a farmer. And then, did you go back to school again?
Yeah, well, that was my first, between my freshman and my sophomore year,
yeah,
that I worked for the Japanese.
Okay, then it was before your freshman year that you worked for the city of Watts. Okay, we're going to start again. And what years did you go to Compton High School?
The year 1921-22, and well, that'd be the...
That was...
I mean, 21 and 22.
And you went...
That's the end of the term.
So you went through your freshman and sophomore years?
Compton High School.
And at the end of your sophomore year, you went to work where?
With an lumber company on Florence Avenue, where it was... with the electric tracks on the south side of the street.
And where did you do that?
Well, when I first started in there, I was working in the yard and helping unload lumber off the railroad cars, stacking lumber, and as a loader helper, then I went into the mill, which was a small mill, and worked there for a while, and I was the one that was running the mill.
What did they do at the mill? What did they mill?
Well, they have a circle saw with a tilt table and a beta head and you can make pulley style with a beta head and...
Is that like molding or what?
No, that's what they used to put in the windows when you had weights in the windows for...
Oh.
For to raise the windows up and down with.
Made window casing.
No, it's inside, not the outside casing, the inside casing. And then they had a cutoff saw, which cut the boards to whatever length you wanted. And then they had a old single head planer. You did a lot of work on all of them, it wasn't supposed to. And the company got in a lot of rough lumber, especially by a 2x12, and then we would make 2x3s and 2x4s and 2x6s out of them, and then surface one edge with the planer, make them surface one edge, and they would be rough. And those days, why a 2-inch piece rough, it's 1, 2 to 2¼ inches thick. Now your extra 2-inch material is put this next 1 5/8 of an inch thick. At that time, many of the houses were being built by 2-3 studs. The big many were being built with warm wood walls on the interior. What they were called novelty siding, that was novelty siding. It was 4-inch or 6-inch, and some drop siding on the outside. They had a couple of pretty good contracts, pretty good deal on Lincoln Heights and on Boyle Heights. I made a few trips to Boyle Heights to help on those wall boards and whatnot. So then I got in the mill. I had to pick up the orders in the office for what was to go out. If you had a mate. At that time, most of all windows had the windowsill was redwood. Windowsill. And so you should have a regular machine to bevel the edges with. We'd take the redwood and we'd bevel the edge on the sill with the circle saw and then go with the one the planer and two of us, one on the feeding, one on the other side, and we'd try and run that through the planer on that bevel and smooth up just barely, take a light cut and smooth up each edge. And sometimes it didn't get all right through without twisting.
That's what he meant,
that
he said you did things you weren't supposed to do with those.
No, that's what I mean. It wasn't equipped to do. That's what I meant when I said that. It was a different little job like that. Yeah, special machine. The big mills, they had one machine they called a sticker machine, and that made all the different types of molding. And that was the most memory of it. That was about the highest price hourly paid man. It wasn't. The yard was a sticker machine there. I was clear up to getting it at 75 cents an hour.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you make more money in the lumber yard than you had at the Cudahy Ranch at the City of Watson
and other jobs? It started in at 50 cents an hour.
Was that
very good? It was a dollar and a half higher than any hourly wage I made up to that time. And,
how could 50 cents
a day?
Oh.
A dollar and a half a day. And about 2½. I can work for the ranch. And when I worked the hourly for the Japanese, I got 2½. And there it's probably 50 cents an hour, which was the about the prevailing common labor pay at that time.
But you
must
have got more when you went to the mill.
Yeah, I got, I started at 50 cents an hour and was on a helper job, and after being in there, I worked in about 2 years, I worked up to 75 cents an hour. When I was on it for quite a while for 65 cents an hour, and I finally got up to 75 cents an hour.
You were in charge of this whole milling operation and you still only got 75 cents an hour?
Yeah, that's as mill as it was. But I used to work Saturdays and sometimes Sundays running stock. I want to help her. We had.
Okay, so the job in the mill was a 5-day-a-week job.
5-day-a-week job.
And Saturdays and Sundays, what kind of stock did you run?
Well, we run cutting the 2x12, so they're different size stock, and then taking somebody wanted a clear piece of 2x6, where you take a rough 2x6 and surface of 4 sides you want to finish them. We made a lot of finish lumber, especially in a 2-inch thick lumber. Plus, they got in a lot of kiln dried. These weren't kiln dried. The ones that didn't require kiln dried lumber Well, we made a lot of fish. Well, one time we had five men in the mill, two on the planer and two on the saw, and one out picking up orders.
Five in addition to you, or were you the one out picking up the orders?
No, that was in addition to me. Sometime I went out on orders, and sometime I was working on running the planer, and sometime the saw. But,
and when you ship things to Lincoln Heights or Boyle Heights or something, did you ship them on the
TV? No, we had old lumber trucks, you know, type with the rollers on the, on the hard rubber tires, guard your teeth out when you got there.
Okay, I know about rollers on the dead, but why don't you explain that? Why you have lumbers on the dead of a lumber truck? Rollers on the dead of a lumber truck.
Well, the truck, you have this, what they used to do, you build the load up, and if you're heavier, if you have a mixed load, like going to build a house, or you'd have two guys, and you'd have one inch stock, you might even have molding. And you put your two guys on the bottom, and your one inch stock, like sheeting, so forth. And then your lighter or short pieces on top. Now you set this up that time on what they call horses. And the back horse would have an angled base, and the front horse would be just straight up and down post. So then your truck would back under that, and these rollers would back under that. It'd be just high enough so the rollers would just a little bit lower than the load, and then knock that truck support down and roll on back to the back one, which was supposed to be built so that it would be up to the stop board by that time. If it wasn't, you could take a spike and put the load and roll it up there. So then you'd rope it down, and when the man got on the job, he'd pick out the spot. Then you'd get out, and according to how it was, what the load and who the driver was, you'd get out and take the spike and roll that back till the load started tipping, and it didn't roll off the roller. And some of them would roll it back a little bit and then get in the truck and give it a quick surge forward and slide out and run it that way. That way it didn't take as much labor as rolling back to the rollers all the way.
Yeah, the reason I asked about the PE is that you said that the lumber yard was on the PE track. And I wondered if there was some reason that did you receive lumber that way?
That's the way that our lumber came in, was on PE cars. And I was siding I think it held nine cars, I don't know for sure. Finally, get gangs on there, they get a bunch of cars in there, they have paid the mirrors if it's paid over a certain length of time. And they bring guys up from Skid Row. And the regular help, they gotta work around on losing those cars, always carrying a wrench or something in their pocket. Good size ranch in their pocket or something, and we got the guys out skip it open, and they tend to get the nose bent or the temple skip up.
Okay, so did you go back to high school?
No.
How come?
Well, most of all the money I made while I was in the lumber yard went for supporting or help support the family. And I had to keep on working to support my mother and brother. And I didn't have what it took to work and go to school. There wasn't so much of that in those days anyway. You didn't get no help to continue school from anybody else. You did it up to you or your family did it, or you didn't go. and I don't know if it, I guess there was people on welfare at the time, but most all the ones I know were working one way or another, what they live on is what they earn, or friends, family, help, friends and family, neighbors. Either somebody knew somebody was short on groceries or something, or they'd make down share some of their groceries with them. And a lot of people were glad to get hand-me-down clothes and wore out, and it was amongst different neighbors during my life. Either somebody in the neighborhood was glad to get outgrown clothes, even give them to Goodwill or some of those organizations like that, to just give them to the people who need it in the neighborhood.
Is this the time that you said you picked up the house a little bit?
Yeah, well, I was working the lumber yard. Put a new roof on it, wallpapered in, wallboarded the inside, papered it, and put 6-inch drop siding on the outside, and the original California at that time.
Does that make it easier to keep warm in the winter?
Oh yeah, it's better a little bit to stay warm in the winter time. I don't think too much about it in the summertime.
Okay. What happened at the lumber yard that you didn't work there anymore?
Well, I don't remember for sure whether it was trader or secretary with that lumber company anyway. He had stock in it for his stock, was my understanding, for his stock, and I don't know whether it was tax consideration or not. He took over the branch, the Florence branch of the Woodhead Lumber Company. Their main yard was on Paper Boulevard in the 33,000 block.
And did they have other branches or just two?
That's two is all I know of. It's a big yard. They had a big mill there, and I had a chance to go to work when the yard I was working, come under new management, I had a chance to go to work at the Pico yard. But public transportation wasn't such that it would take you an hour and a half or better to get there, 2 hours to get there. And I didn't have any other thing but a bicycle, so it was a little bit far to go, so I didn't take the... I would have made more money to start the Pico yard than I was making where I was working.
But you couldn't get there on the Pico right there?
No. Well, I don't know how close Santa Monica line is, but I don't think much close enough to get out. One way you could have went if you went into L.A. and then went out Santa Monica line, and I don't know how. Don't remember how close that line was to Pico Avenue. So then I was out of work, and then I went to work for Bar and Gebb for 2 weeks.
What's that?
Bar and Gebb Lumber Company.
Oh, the coffee?
No, it was up there on the Mado and I don't remember across the street.
In
Linwood? No, Florence District.
Okay.
Southeast section. And then Bob and Jeff had a yard later in Compton. And so they didn't handle their good lumber as Woodhead Lumber Company did. And to find out I had a chauffeur's license, so they were having me go out on taking the truck out and making deliveries when they show the driver, and I was only getting $3.50 a day at Bar and Gibb. They get $6 a day. What in lumber company? So I quit. And So then I was out of work about 2 weeks. And a friend of mine who had worked at Wood and Lumber Company and went for and worked for AMSCO Steel, said they were putting people on down there. Why did I come down and see about going to work there? So I went down to AMSCO Steel, Derek, Steel Derek and Equipment, on Alameda Street, north of Florence. And they put me right on. And I started in at 50 cents an hour. And you automatically got a nickel an hour raise every 6 months. On the hydraulic press most of the time while I was there. Pushing out the winch for the bull wheels and the band wheels and the hubs and the spokes.
Then they didn't just
make
Derrick, they had different kinds of oil field equipment.
Yeah, it was oil field. It was Derrick and Equipment Company. And then they had, and that I went with the Derrick. That was a, and the walking, steel walking beams were coming in then. They had wooden walking beams up till not too long before. And they were making steel walking beams. I worked a little while with a boilermaker on the steel walking beams. And I had some work. I had to swing a 10-pound sledge, and two of us, and I was having to sling it over my left shoulder because the other guy was slinging the way we expect. And I wasn't doing very good, and he told me, he said, "You'll never make a boilermaker if you can't swing a sledgehammer better than that." And I said, "Well, I sure hope I don't have to do that. I don't want to make a boilermaker." So I worked there for the 1st of July. I went to work there first part of the very last of December.
What year?
24. Worked there until July 25. Just enough to get my nickel an hour raise, but didn't collect it. And then I heard there was an opportunity to go to work down at the Pan American Refinery.
Okay, just here. What did boilermakers have to do with making
walking
beams?
Well, they were fitting up, you made out of a U channel line, you press that to shape the walking beam, and then you there was two of them for the top and the bottom, and then there were plates cut out to fit the side, and then there were holes drilled in the U-beam and the plates, and then you fit those side plates to the U-beams, and they weren't usually bent, so they fit very good, so you had to you put the I don't know what to call them, but they're like a spike in the holes, and then the boilermaker riveted it.
Okay. So essentially what they did was to rivet the thing again.
Yeah, they were riveting the walking beam, the plates onto the cannon, stretching the walking beam.
Okay, I'm sorry. You were
going to
tell about the cannon.
There was one interesting thing happened there one time. I don't know what they had a new riveter that on the hub for the band wheel. Now you could get one of those 5 or 6 rivets at a time. You could drive at a time, sit up there. And they was working on this, which was alongside the building. and some rivers that were working in the, towards the center. One guy went off and left his rivet gun with the pressure on, laying on the floor. Those times, most of the rivet guns had the trigger on the outside. The state law made them put them on the inside later. And the fellow didn't know anything about rivet guns come along, and he was looking it over, and he took the trigger there, and he had it laying parallel with the floor, and he pushed the trigger, and the die went out of the gun and went right between the heads of these two boilermakers that had made a hole through the side of the wall, and the two boilermakers looked up and started, but they saw it at the same time, and he disappeared going out the door out the north end of the building.
Never to be seen again,
no doubt. He didn't come back in that area right away. I don't think he belonged to that particular area anyway. Now where do we go?
Is there an
American? Oh yeah, I heard about the job down at, possibility of job down at Pan American, so I went down there and they had a personnel man, Stanton. I was introduced to him by a friend of mine who was a chief steam engineer for the refinery at the time, which helped out a bit. So I was one of the people that got picked to go to work that day. And at that time, for years later, I don't know, in fact, everybody went to work. Company worked in the labor gang, hired into the labor gang. So there was only one day in it. You hired in the labor gang, so your top seniority was always in the labor gang. And so I went to work in the labor gang. Well, I did the labor gang jobs. It was July. Then about in August, I went to work on the cracking plant. I referred to him as the cleanup boy. I had to wash up the oil spills and do work around the units. Cleaned up, scrubbed the floors, and...
How much did you make in the labor
camp? 50
cents an hour.
So
you took a nickel an hour?
Yeah, I went and took it. If I'd stayed on, I'd been making a nickel an hour more. But I went in with the promise that I should be able to get into the operating department. And the bottom rate of the operating department was 85 cents. So that's 6 days a week. They just before I went to work, they changed from 7 days a week to 6 days a week.
How many days a week did you work at ENSCO?
Six. And straight time.
Yes, but
you
still took a cut with the promise of advancement
when
you went to
Pan American. Yeah. And their rate was based because they knocked off one day a week and they added so many cents to the bottom wage because they knocked off one day a week. So I don't know what it was before. It was 85 cents. There was a possibility of being promoted to a higher paid job.
What kind of jobs did you do in the labor gang?
Oh, dig ditches, unload brick. That's a job for you. And hold weeds around some of the tanks in the tank farm. was mostly, I was in the gang of digging ditches most of the time. Then, sometime when the slack period, our laser pusher would take part of us out in the tank farm and put us to digging weeds and tell us to stay there until they got something else for us. But we only took part because some of the guys would go on and off visiting someplace and he'd come back for you and you wouldn't be there. You might stay there an hour or you might stay there 2 hours. So the only ones that he didn't have enough work for everybody, digging ditches or heavy work, why he'd take the ones that stay put where he'd take them. So they got out of maybe an hour or two's work every now and then.
Was it hard to dig ditches? I mean, were there pipes buried under the ground and all like that?
Well, it's a lot of it was digging ditches to put in new pipes. The hardest job was down by the reservoir pump house, and it was in a low section of the yard. The yard was lowering, and when they put it in, they put some pipelines to it, and then they made a fill across these pipelines. So there's one of those lines down in the bottom section that's going to leak. And we went down to it manually. So we had to dig down, and after dug it pretty wide, and then made a shelf, and then part of the gang dug on down the pipeline. When we got down to it, well, it was about, I don't know, 15 feet, something like that, down below. But anyway, bottom crew would fill up on the shelf, and then the guys on the shelf would sort of dig it up onto the ground level. That was it. When I first started digging ditches, it's a knack to it. People think you get in there and just dig a ditch, but to dig a ditch and have a straight side, the side straight. But I had a good foreman, so he showed me how to dig ditches so you had straight-sided ditches. And he was a good foreman. He says, I don't want you to... I was used to an AMSCO, you better hit the ball or somebody's going to be on your neck. And I was really going at it. He said, hey, kid, he said, you won't last all day that way. He said, we don't expect you to do it all at once. He said, all I expect you to do is keep moving. He says, you keep the dirt moving. You don't have to try to get it all out at once. He said, just as long as you just keep it moving, like, you won't hear from me. And he was very good for me.
Did you keep on living at Florence Avenue all
this time? I lived there until I was married.
Well, how?
Until 19.
Was that before or after you went to work at Pan American?
You married?
Yeah.
Oh, I was working at Pan American a little over 4 years before I was married.
How did you get from your home to the Pan American Refinery
at
Watson? I assume it was at Watson.
Well, first it took the Watts Local, Pacific Electric. Watts Local picked it up at Ion Station, which was halfway between Florence Avenue and 80 Avenue. Rode that car to Watts, then took the Long Beach San Pedro. I took the San Pedro car down to Watson.
And was that pretty close to the
entrance
to the refinery?
Yeah, it was just a matter of about 100 yards. Maybe not quite that much. And it was about same distance, maybe a little bit, maybe 400 feet from my house to the that's wrong. It was about she bought the piggy. I'm going back to when I lived in Mary Avenue, which was only about 100 yards or so from the Iowa station.
That was pretty convenient, still.
Yeah, it was very convenient. And at that time they run a car at night, so that and they company ran the shift, so we could get when we worked till afternoon shift, while the car came at 11:43, and we got off about 11:30, which gave us time to walk out there. And usually the fellows come in a little early, so we got briefly got away about 11:20. Let's give us time to. It was a considerable longer walk from the unit to the gate than it was from the gate to the. It was about three times as far as it was to be.
Okay. When you hired him, you said you worked 6 days a week. How many hours a day?
Eight.
And did you hire him on daylight or?
Yeah, the labor gang, all of them don't dig up. Unless there was something special come up that they put a gang on, nice to do something.
So what about when you became the cleanup boy? Somehow that doesn't sound like a promotion when you become the cleanup boy. So I guess it was, from the labor gang.
Yeah, it paid me 10 cents an
hour more. Was
that a... I was carried on a special... counting labor foreman, not the one I'd been working for, but another one, come over every day to see that I was on the job. In fact, it got so he just come over once or twice a week after I'd been there for a while. And then we brought another fellow in. He hired in 2 weeks after I did. I got him down. We had two of us working there. And the other fellow is still a very good friend of mine.
Was that a daytime job also?
Yes, that was daytime. And I went to work in shift work about November 1925. That's when I started up the thermal crude and cracking plant, the original thermal crude and cracking plant.
And did you get another job then?
Yeah, I went to the fireman. At that time they had oil heaters, and you fired them from the front of the heater. You can fire them from the control room. Well, as of now, an automatic, completely automatic control. You fired manually with burners on the front of the heaters. These heaters are a tube heater. They run crude oil first so that the that out, check out the equipment and everything. And they were going to run resid, or as known as fuel oil, black fuel oil. It was supposed to crack that, but when they read it, it didn't run wrong because it coked up so fast, the tubes coked up, and they couldn't, they cracked it too much coke, so they ended up running gas oil, or known to the general public as diesel. So we run the years it ran from there until 1938, when it was shut down and they started a new thermal food and cracking unit.
Okay, I don't understand what the fireman did. I mean, did you control the amount of heat, or what?
You fire, you control the heat just like you would on a gas cooking stove in your home. If you wanted more heat, you went and opened up on the valve and got more flame. If you wanted less heat, well, you cut it back.
How did you decide if you wanted